WaveAct, the web-free software company that understands what you want.
Hi everyone, welcome at WaveAct. Today with Matthew Sweezy, who is the former co-founder of the Salesforce Web3 Studio. He's also currently Web3 investor and advisor for a variety of companies. And today we will talk about why tokenization is actually a game changer. So thank you, Matthew, for being here. It's really a pleasure talking with you. And yeah, starting out, I want to give you the opportunity to let us know what you're currently working on, maybe how your day looks like, and yeah, whatever you want to tell us about yourself.
Oh, cool. Thanks, Kevin. It's great to be here. So I spend most of my day working on what I believe is the future of the internet, which is what I believe is called tokenization. I have a very different idea of tokenization, currently advising a company called Smart Token Labs, who is working on a new protocol, helping kind of take that to market, called Smart Layer, which is really where we're looking at the missing link between Web 2 and Web 3, being able to solve existing Web 2 problems, such as integration and data sharing with Web 3 utilities.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Before we get into that, there might be some viewers that have possibly never heard about tokenization. Could you maybe briefly explain what it is in as simple as possible?
Sure. As simple as possible, tokenization is really just using a token as a new primitive of the internet. Tokens are not a new thing. They've been around a long time. So the majority of us know tokens through the term of essentially a currency, like a Bitcoin or Ethereum. And that is a token. That is a fungible token, meaning that it's essentially a currency. It's a digital currency backed up by the blockchain. You then have another type of token, which is another type of asset or ownership token, which is a non-fungible token, which just means each of those tokens is unique. So it's not like a currency, it's more like a trading card. And so those are the two types of core tokens that we know about. Now, both of those are classified as asset classes, right? They're usually to define ownership of something. They give you some basic rights, and you can take them places and say, hey, listen, I have this, or you, if it's a currency, you can spend it. Those are too simplistic and what most people know of and think of as tokenization. When I say tokenization, I mean something very different. I mean literally a new way that we connect the internet. And it's not just currency, and it's not just proving ownership that you have something. It's really tokens as applications. Now, follow this logic and you can understand. If I want you to think about a business service or a function, right? How does one party deliver something to another party, right? So let's go back to when we first got the internet. We get the internet and we deliver business services, first off, through websites. The first thing you could do for a website was get information. Then we started to deliver service, meaning you would go to a company's website to interact with the company directly, whether that was buy a product, configure a product, get a service directly, right? The next wave became applications. We then moved those services to applications because it was an easier way to deliver those services to the end consumer. Most all businesses have a website. Most all businesses have an app because those are the easiest ways to deliver those services. Now, if we think of the next wave is tokenization of service. Now, this is where it gets really tricky. So let me kind of pull this apart really quickly. In the first two examples, the website and the application, those are a central repository where the individual goes to deliver the service, centralized. If we're to decentralize that, essentially make those services composable and portable, that's called tokenization. Now, that's a crazy concept. Let me give you an example of what that would even look like and mean. Let's say that you are a car manufacturer, and every time you create a car, you also create a car ownership token, right? This is not just to prove that you own the car. This is literally the functionality of the car. This is a smart token able to pull through business function, such as you go to Apple Wallet, you open up your car token, and you push the button to start your car from the token. You push the button to lock the car from the token. You've integrated the insurance token into that token. Let's say that you have to go, you want to go drive for Uber. You go to Uber's registration. They say prove that you have a car of a certain type and that you have certain insurance. To do that, you simply present that smart token and it allows all those systems to integrate together. Now, let's say that you are going through that Uber flow and Uber says, cool, you've got the right car. You do have insurance, but you don't have the right level of insurance. Now, traditionally, that individual would have to then either go to their insurance application or their insurance provider's website to then top up their insurance to the correct level of insurance for rideshare. in a tokenized scenario, in this scenario, that service is pulled through into that moment. Because when you've connected that token to Uber's site, you now have business services delivered directly to you in that moment. So you simply click a button, top up your insurance, and now Uber sees that you have the correct level of insurance and you're allowed to be an Uber driver. So we've taken those business services out of those centralized places. We've tokenized them and allowed them to become portable and composable, creating an entirely new user experience for the web.
Love that. Thanks for the example. When I think about the car example, right? Alfa Romeo, if I'm not mistaken, has already integrated an NFT token, basically a non-fungible token, into their car for more kind of traceability use cases, right? Well, the car owner did that maintenance as, you know, suggested by the manufacturer and so on. And I really believe that these kind of use cases, especially when it comes to proof that you have that insurance and these kind of things, absolutely makes sense. You also talked about, and I think that's the kind of special stance on your side, right? When it comes to executing, let's say, actions on top of the NFT or token, whatever standard it follows, right? It feels a little bit like I can imagine a lot of people now jumping up and thinking, well, why can't we do that in a centralized way, and why is that better?
Yeah, that's a great question. So let's just break that apart really quickly. So the internet currently functions, and we have APIs, right? We can build integrations and we can do these things. Building an integration on a one-to-one scenario is not complicated. If in that scenario, if Uber only had to integrate to one insurance company, that's not that big of a problem. They could do that. How many insurance companies are there? Right now you see the problem, which is anytime we try to do integrations at scale, they're hampered by the ability for us to literally scale those integrations. We would have to build APIs to every insurance company and then manage all those APIs to every insurance company. If we instead move that to tokenization, we can remove that issue of scale. So this is the concept of, it's very easy to do these things one-on-one in a Web2 environment through traditional technology. Anytime that we want to start to scale these partnerships, that's trick number one. It's very hard to scale. Trick number two is data. So anytime that I want to then pass data to you, there's this thing called GDPR, which means I have to comply to GDPR. What we're doing with tokenization is actually putting the data in the individual's hands, and the individual is becoming the integration point, which is completely GDPR compliant. So the individual is the one bringing their data around. It's not one company sharing via an API with the other, which has data privacy issues. It's empowering the individual with their own data so that they can take it to wherever they need it to be fired and functioned to then create better end user experiences. Those are the two things that you can't do in a Web2 world.
The second part is particularly interesting, and I'm curious how you view that on how we can actually do that, right? Because I assume now that you want to have this tokenization on a public blockchain, right? Which means Ethereum, whatever, or any kind of layer two, Polygon, or some other sidechain. And when we have public blockchains, data is actually public, right? So
Correct.
Do you think about integrating some kind of zero knowledge technology, or what's your approach or your thought model in that regard when trying to achieve GDPR compliance or data, better data privacy, for example?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's two easy ways to think about this. Number one is not everything has to live on chain. Just because it's Web3 and it's tokenized does not mean it has to live on a public blockchain, right? There are decentralized ledgers that are not public. Right? It still can allow for these things to happen. That also allows for us to create frictionless experiences without wallets, right? So these tokens don't require anybody to even have a wallet. We can put these tokens directly in an email account. I can put these directly into an Apple wallet, right? So let's first off remove the notion that everything in Web3 has to be on chain in a public blockchain, because it doesn't. The second aspect is then to the question. So one is the public blockchain. The second is the individual is the data center. Right, so they are bringing their own data, which then allows that to be compliant. So that's really kind of the answer, is that it doesn't all have to be on a public blockchain. The third is then, yes, ZK. And that's like a DUS statement, but it's even further than ZK, right? We're thinking about attestations. So this is another type of technology. An attestation is just a proof that you have something. You can think of it as the same function, which is if I go to you in a traditional world, what most people know is I have a token and I hold that token in a wallet. Then I go to use that token. I then connect my wallet to a site. That site reads my wallet and then sees what tokens I have. Right? That is one scenario. That's not the only scenario that is possible. You can also have an attestation, which says that I go to a site, I then give a token that proves I have other tokens, which doesn't allow you to see the actual token. It's just a yes or no. It's a binary, just like a ZK. Right? And so we can use those as well to create and share data. So it's all GDPR compliant. But the easy answer is not everything has to be on a public blockchain.
Yeah, that's where ZK and other types of of other type of mathematics, for example, can really help here, right? For example, so going back to your first argument of data interoperability, I'm curious how you feel, because I know what some people would say here now is, well, you still have to agree on a blockchain, on a network, what kind of token standards to use, and so on and so on. So you still need to agree on some kind of standards. And mm-hmm. if we agree on decentralized or centralized standards, actually doesn't make much of a difference, just that, well, the other thing requires Web3 developers and the other thing Web2 developers, and one thing is centralized and one thing is decentralized. So in terms of the data interoperability aspect, I would be curious on how would you argue to someone who would come up with an argument like that, for example.
I'm not even sure if I really follow that argument. Can you make that a little bit more clear?
Yeah, sure. Sorry. Well, in general, when you say it's about, you have, for example, a token, right? And that's a unified interface. Every insurance company follows the same standard, right? Mm-hmm. And car companies, for example, or whoever, can then in a standardized way can grab access that data and utilize it, right? And the thing is that you still need to agree on what kind of token standard to use, what kind of network to use, and then people could argue, well, why not agreeing on some kind of REST API interface or something like that?
Got it. Yeah. So good question. So a couple of things here. One is company Smart Token Labs have been advising, has created Smart Layer to do just this, right? It is an interface and that allows for tokens to then be interoperable. You can essentially interoperate on-chain, off-chain, and cross-chain without having to then build those bridges to the different chains. So it is an interoperable standard. Now there's two other things with that. Part of that is they've actually created a standard called Token Script, which would actually be the interface and language standard. And they've also put forth multiple EIPs, the last being, I believe, EIP 6159, which essentially allows for a standard for a smart contract to actually be able to reference and carry through an external script.
Mm-hmm. So similar to the XNFTs that I heard a couple of months ago, not sure if you know them. It's not on Ethereum, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was a Solana type of standard, but it was kind of in the same direction, right? You had an NFT that had some executable code in it. So that's definitely a direction that I can imagine that a lot of people are targeting at, right? So
yeah, I mean, we have to. It's if we want to reach mass scale, right? Here's what we have to do. It's currency is cool, but there's too many people that are afraid of it, right? Talking with every major, I've used to work with every major Fortune 500 company on their Web3 projects, and also Salesforce running the studio. They all want to do Web3, and the CEOs believe in Web3, and they believe in blockchain. What they don't believe in, and what they're scared of, is they're scared of asset class tokens, because that then creates lots of issues for them. Creates legal issues, it creates regulatory issues. Consumers don't want them. There's been massive backlash. There's brand reputation risks. So if we imagine that these businesses are going to use tokenization in that format, they're not. In fact, a lot of them have pulled their projects back. Look how many have scaled down NFT projects in the recent months, right? That's just not what they're doing. Now, they're all still holding on and saying, we believe that this technology is valid. And what they want to use that technology for is solving existing business problems. Tokenization as an asset doesn't solve an existing business problem. It creates problems to solve. It doesn't solve existing ones. What we're doing here is we're saying, listen, you have existing problems of how do we integrate and how do we create a better business network, right? Think about network effects and efficiencies, business efficiencies. Anytime a technology allows anybody to do something quicker, faster, or easier, it always wins regardless. What we're doing here is enabling business networks to share data and create better business experiences and better business efficiencies. Those are two core problems that they all have that they're trying to solve. So that's why everyone is going to be starting to focus on tokens as ways to solve existing business problems, because that's how we get to mainstream adoption. You take that one step further and you say, once we can do that, well, then we don't even have to use the same concepts that we've used before. This concept of you have to have a wallet to start, we can use off-chain tokens. In fact, we've just done multiple projects where we used off-chain tokens. The individual in the future, we're not going to be saying Web3, right? Every business is going to be using all types of technology. One, two, three, they still send letters. We don't call them a Web0 company. Right. So just because you use the blockchain is not going to make you a Web3 company. It's simply going to make you more efficient and allow you to compete and have better competition in the market. That's what it's going to allow for. Right. So I think if we keep those things in mind, I mean, that's where we need to go. And that's why everyone's going to be doing those, because that's where the problems exist. So if we go back to all those CEOs and say, hey, listen, this is not Web3 as an asset class. This is not Web3 as tokenized loyalty points. They don't give a shit about that. What they care about is how do I create better end user experiences and how do I create better business efficiencies? That is what we're solving here. And that's why everyone's going to be focused on that aspect of tokenization moving forward.
Love it. We have mentioned some kind of identity use cases a couple of times, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
And we also scratched on top of data privacy. So one thing that already happens, and I would be curious on your opinion on that, is even though that a lot of data might be off-chain for all kinds of identity tokens, you still have some kind of metadata attached to it, such as who issued the token, what type of token is it, maybe it has a name and some other data attached to it that's publicly available. And one thing that will be possible and already is possible, that you can tag a lot of addresses and have some kind of, you just have a data silo that's public, right? Even though a lot of sensitive data is off-chain, you might still be able to assume certain things, right? Thanks to data science. How do you, because it sounds like you're actively working on that, right? You're heavily involved in it. Have you already thought about that, or how are you guys solving that? Or is that something that's further in the future, or is not an issue at all? Would love to know.
I mean, it's a really good question. It depends on, like, there's lots of different things here. Number one is, depending on where the person, whoever creates the token, depending on how they want to store the data and where they want to put the data, it's going to be up to them, right? So if they want to put data on public, you know, stuff on a public chain, they're going to have lots of issues. You should never put information like that on chain that's public, right? That's why we're talking about off-chain data. And those databases, we're using cryptography and Web3 technology to verify, but you're only going to be able to verify if you're asking questions, and then you're still going to have a layer where you're not actually going to be able to take the data, right? So scenario, you take token to company Y to prove that you have X and to pull in business function. They're going to have a very limited view. They're just going to fire things. They're not going to be able to see the underlying data and pull that into their database and keep it, right? So we're talking about layers of abstraction. The keys here are still to ensure that the individual owns the data at the end, right? If all we end up creating is a way for somebody to go in and create a bot and use data science and AI to scrape the web and to create user profiles of individuals they don't want created, we've not done anything good. And so what we're doing here is we're really focused on making sure that when we do create these things, that we are solving for those key issues of data ownership And to us, data ownership just means that the ability for the individual to have the data where they want it and to use it how they want to have it happen, right? So that's step one. Step two is to make sure that there's privacy in place, which that's why we talk about off-chain tokens in combination with on-chain tokens to then prevent some of these use cases where you can just scrape everything and then build user profiles. And then the last is then making sure that when we implement these solutions, that we understand how we're implementing them and we're not requiring people to do things such as connect wallet. Right? We don't need to connect a wallet to a site to know what's inside of that wallet and to use that wallet. There's other technology that can allow that individual to stay anonymous from a wallet ID perspective while still validate what's in that wallet and still get the functionality they need from those tokens in that experience. So I think it's a combination of making sure we know what's possible, making sure businesses know when they create these things, what is safe and how do we create these? And then three, making sure that we build systems that when consumers want to engage and leverage these tokens, that we're building systems that allow them to then maintain their privacy.
What do you think, what kind of companies, except for sure Smart Token Labs, might get, let's say, get that right really soon?
Get that right. Yeah, I think it's not going to be that hard. Because you know people aren't just going to just go at this blindly, right? There, no company goes in and says, "I'm just going to make a tokenization project and doesn't talk to people." And so it's making sure that as we guide these companies through, that we're ensuring these things to happen, and we are, right? We're releasing projects with one of the world's top cricket players. We've done projects for FIFA World Cup. We've done projects for the Ethereum Foundation. There's lots of big players who are creating these, wanting to do these technologies and implementing these systems. And they're abiding by those rules. So, we're seeing privacy be maintained. And that's one of the big aspects of the technology that we have in the security is privacy.
Love it. Well, from my end, not sure if you have any things that you want to share at the end of the podcast now. Otherwise, I would say, do you maybe have three key takeaways for people to remember? Because we have discussed a lot of different, but still closely related topics today. And I think there's a lot of essence to it that people might want to remember after this course.
Sure. Yeah, the three key things that you should always keep in mind moving forward. Number one is that there's a difference between securitization and tokenization, right? So, and that really means that there's a difference between tokens, that they don't always have to be assets. They can go beyond just being assets to become applications. That's step one. Step two is as we think about the future of the internet, we must think about composable services. Right, and that's what we can then use tokens to do is be composable services. And why would we want to do that? Well, it's because we're solving the key problems that the internet has of integration and data sharing. That's what allows us to solve those things. And then three is to just imagine a new world where we're not essentially just using tokens as currencies, but we're really using them as applications and creating better user experiences. And that's really the end game here, is the businesses that learn how to use tokenization to create better user experiences are going to have the same market effects and dominance that the same ones that learned how to use digitization first. Netflix, Salesforce, Amazon, right? They were the first ones to deliver services via the web. Then you got to the app evolution, and that's when we see Instagram and all these app-first businesses. The next wave of businesses hasn't been created that's going to dominate the next digital landscape, but I guarantee you they will be tokenized.
I think that's a great ending. Nothing on my side to add. Matthew, really thank you for sharing all that. If you want me to put some kind of links, I will add them in the video description as well for everyone watching or listening to this. And I would say thank you, Matthew, for your time. And yeah, thank you for watching.
Great. Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Sure thing.
WaveAct, the web-free software company that understands what you want.